When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game, with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's expert in football finance, Kieran Maguire. Kieran, I don't think either of us would actually describe football as beautiful just at the moment, would we?
No, I think we'll both put a veil over recent results. Yes. For our clubs, I think it does show the difference between the big six clubs post-pandemic, when they've got the advantage of having nine quality players on the bench as well. So the monetary issues are quite intriguing in terms of the gap that's now showing between the top and the non-top, and I think we both know in which camp we are in.
Yeah, that's fine for you, Kieran, but we lost to Burnley. You lost to Man United. We lost to Burnley.
You also lost to Liverpool.
Oh yeah, well that's fine. That was taken as red. Liverpool was taken as red. Losing to Burnley, a team who had two goalkeepers on the bench and 4 minutes of Premier League experience, was pretty unforgivable. My only consolation the other night was, Kieran, that we had a couple of theatre and comedy producers around for a socially distanced meeting, obviously, because we're trying to work out how we can get back on stage. Because as you may be aware, that the comedy clubs and theatres have been told they can open on Saturday, but they can't do shows, which is handy. So we were trying to work out how we can start earning some money. So I was sort of doing 5 minutes on and 5 minutes off with the game and the meeting. And my one consolation at the end was I probably can't afford a season ticket next year. So that really cheered me up. Well, if we're grumpy, Kieran, then Wigan fans are going to be even less chipper than us, because just a few minutes ago it was announced that Wigan Athletic had gone into administration. Now, we spoke about them very, very recently, and you used the word shenanigans. So what do you make of this in the short time you've had to assimilate the news?
It looks as if the new owners of Wigan Athletic, a company called The Next Leader Fund, owned by a guy called Al Young, has effectively bought the club for around about 17 to 18 million pounds. And then immediately turned the taps off. Wigan were losing 9 million pounds a year before COVID. So therefore, it's a bit like, you know, buying a new house and not having a survey done on it. You need to know what your running costs are. And it looks like he's either not done due diligence or has done an immediate U-turn in respect of committing to underwriting the losses of the club.
But isn't he the chap that sold the club to himself, bought the club and then sold it to himself, technically, is how you described it?
Yeah, it's trying to get into the individual shareholdings. Al Young owned a minority stake in the club. Right. The majority was owned by Stanley Choi of IEC. Now, IEC run casinos and hotels in the Philippines, so therefore they've got no experience of running a football club in Lancashire. Neither has Al Young. Some sort of deal has been done between the two. Perhaps it was done at the casino, for all we know. Yeah. It was transferred over. But within literally a couple of weeks, no money was being pumped in to pay for the day-to-day costs. And it's gone into administration, with the administrators saying, well, we're looking to sell it and find a new owner.
And what's interesting as well, the administrator quashed the rumour. I think we all immediately suspected, of course, that it would be COVID-related. But the administrator was very keen to point out that isn't necessarily the case, and that it had previously, i.e. before this sale, had previously been a well-run club, and there was no reason to believe that this would happen and that he didn't think it had been accelerated by the virus. So that's it. I don't know if that's any small consolation to Wigan fans, but it probably is to fans of other clubs, isn't it, who are worried about a domino effect maybe.
But very much so. Certainly under Dave Whelan, Wigan were one of the best run clubs in England, as far as I was concerned. You know, Dave ran a really tight ship. He made sure that every purchase was authorised by himself. He didn't allow any fat on the bone as far as the club was concerned. And clearly it took them into the Premier League. They won the FA Cup and so on. But when he sold it in November 2018, I mean, Dave's now 83 years old, so you can understand it from his point of view that he didn't feel it was right for him to carry on any further. He left a really well-run organisation, but very quickly the losses accelerated, and the people who did take over, that they didn't appear to have much experience of running a club. So, you know, we have done a little bit of homework, and I'm indebted to one of the listeners to the pod, Nigel Lee, who's one of our listeners in Hong Kong. He runs a Chinese football finance website. He sort of supplied me with the details as to the people involved.
Well, thank you for that, Nigel, and I suspect we might be picking your brains again in the next few weeks. It makes you wonder whether the new owners hadn't noticed the fact that Wigan were no longer a Premier League club, and it had been a couple of years since they won the FA Cup. So there's a couple of things here. First of all, what's next? I mean, there's an automatic 12-point deduction, but you can sort of explain to us why that might not take place immediately. And also, I think we need to reassure Wigan fans, and I can confirm this as a Palace fan, administration doesn't necessarily spell disaster and doesn't necessarily spell liquidation. It's basically, for the moment, the club are in the hands of more capable people, essentially, aren't they?
That very much so. So if we look at both of those issues in turn, under EFL rules, there is an automatic 12-point penalty if a club goes into administration. But to stop clubs from manipulating the rules, we don't know as yet when that rule will be applied. If Wigan are relegated on the basis of the matches they play this season, they'll start next year on minus 12 points.
Yeah.
But if they're above the relegation zone, the deduction will be put onto them this season in the Championship. So it could actually tip them from, and at present, I think they're 8 points above the relegation zone. It could actually tip them back into being in the bottom three. So it could have a significant impact. And again, it makes you wonder, what on earth are these new owners doing with, you know, a month of the season left? If Wigan had survived, they could at least have tried to sell the club as a Championship club. And, you know, the fact that next season, you know, they will be playing the likes of, you know, Forest, possibly Derby, who may or may not go up, but Sheffield Wednesday and other big clubs in that division. If you're selling it as a League One club, you're going to get a fraction of the price.
Mm. That manipulation you talked about, by the way, it's the notion that a club that are in trouble will wait to see if they're relegated, and then once they're relegated, will go into administration, and the 12-point deduction would therefore have no relevance. But that's a loophole that the EFL have closed. In terms of what happens next for Wigan and what administration actually entails, I'm guessing that most of our listeners are erudite enough about football finance to know what administration entails. But for those who are new to the pod, can perhaps, again, you can reassure the Wigan fans as well who will be listening to this that it isn't, as I said, necessarily a disaster.
No, we've seen, I think it's been about 40 clubs have gone into administration over the years. If you think about Leicester City, they went into administration and they came back and they won the Premier League. Yeah. So, you know, it's not the death of a club. The whole point about administration is to effectively give it a form of a safety net. It's to stop creditors putting it into liquidation when all the assets would have to be sold. So what's going to happen now is that the people involved, and they do have a lot of experience of running football clubs, they will advertise it for sale. They'll show people round. They'll try to get as good a price as possible with a view to, you know, the maximum that they can get from selling the club means that the more money can be given to creditors. So whoever takes over will acquire the assets of Wigan Athletic, but not the liabilities, not the debts.
And They must be fairly attractive to a buyer. I mean, I know they're not the biggest supported club in the country in terms of numbers, but in terms of recent history and recent romance, they're an attractive proposition, I would have thought, aren't they?
Yes, and remember, the rugby club play there as well, so you've got additional sources of income which would normally take place during the summer months in a non-pandemic world. So yeah, they have been quite smart. They own quite a few bits of property in and around the town, is my understanding. So yes, it would be a decent buy, and it's a club which has proven in the past, certainly under Roberto Martinez, of being capable of not only getting into the Premier League but staying there as well. So the stadium is not going to need a huge amount of maintenance. It's still relatively new. It's got a very good catchment area if it's in one of the higher divisions. So there's plenty of big northern clubs who will come and fill it as from an away fans perspective. Mm. So there's lots of positives for anybody that's interested in buying.
And finally, Kieran, and it's a question that I'm guessing many, many thousands of our listeners will be asking me in their head to ask, or indeed would be treating if I didn't ask. These two new owners who in a matter of weeks bought the club and put it into administration, they passed the EFL's fit and proper person test, did they, as club owners?
Yes, I mean, Al Young with the Next Leader Fund. But remember that those tests are, we need to find out a bit more from the EFL. In terms of the criminality test, which is one of them, that appears to have been passed. I went on to the Wigan website and it did say that the new owners had passed the finance test, which is, do you have proof of funding? But having money is one thing. Being prepared to spend it on the football club appears to be something, it was an avenue that they're not prepared to go down. Perhaps we need to be revisiting these tests and say that when you acquire a football club, you've got to put down a substantial bond to allow the club to prevent the issues that we've seen, not just at Wigan. But remember, there were similar issues taking place at Charlton Athletic when Roland de Chachelet sold it at the end of last year.
Yeah, or perhaps we could use this as another reason to make another attempt to ask somebody at the EFL if they'd like to come on the podcast. But we won't hold our breath in between time. So, Kieran, that's some very big news to start today's pod with. But we do have other stories. And guess what? Some of them are good. Well, goodish. This story we have, it's a big one. And it's about our old friends, the football agents, Kieran. It's been revealed. I never know who reveals these things. Guy sends these questions and says, it's been revealed. I sometimes worry, who's revealed this? Because, you and I from South London backgrounds, Kieran, there's a fine line between revealing and grassing, essentially. It's been revealed that in the 2019-20 season, the Premier League paid out more than £263 million to football agents. So that's between the 20 clubs, more than £263 million. Who spent the most, Kieran, and who spent the least?
Liverpool spent the most, or the biggest, I think it is now the official term for that. So they spent just over £30 million. And I think what's intriguing about the Liverpool figure is, can you name any people they signed during that period?
No. During that period? No, I can't. Good question.
No, so what Liverpool have done is they've focused their agent spending on existing players and extending contracts. So we always tend to think that the likes of Raiola and so on, they get these massive commissions from when star players move. But what we are seeing, and this information actually has come from the Football Association itself. It publishes this once a year. It lists out all of the contracts to which those commissions were involved. And in Liverpool's case, it's all to do with keeping some of their star names at the club for a longer period of time. And given the way that they have played this season, you can understand that why that is the case.
There's no standard commission fee, is there, for football agents? It's like in my business, it's normally 15%. Presumably in football, each agent gets paid differently depending on their experience and depending on the sort of quality of the player they represent.
That's right. And then when you start to dig into the details, and I did contact Jonathan, who came on the show last year, in respect of the role of the agent. Remember, the agent can be representing the selling club. He can be representing the buying club. He can be representing the player. He could even represent all three, which you would think would be a conflict of interest, but that doesn't appear to be the case. And in terms of agents, they either get a percentage of the gross. And remember, this £263 million is just the money the agents are earning from the clubs. It doesn't include the money that they're earning from the players.
Right.
They will be getting a percentage of the player's wage, or they might have charged them a fixed fee. So it does get quite complicated, but I think that £263 million is far from the total figure that's coming from agencies, which makes you understand why so many people are keen to become agents, because, as I understand it, you simply have to go and pay £600 to the Football Association as a fee, effectively a registration fee. You don't need a reference. You don't need any qualifications. You don't need any exams in respect of the issue. You don't even need a police check unless you're representing players who are 16 or 17. So you can see why so many people are attracted to it, given the numbers involved.
Now, some pubs are opening on Saturday. We've got plans to watch the Leicester game, Palace game, if it takes place in a friend's garden. But it so happens that the Pawson's Arms, which is our Palace pub, lies between my house and the friend's garden. So I made a promise that I would pop in and have my first pint in a long time. And psychologically, I'm looking forward to it. I guarantee that if there are any other Palace fans in there, this question will be asked me, because it's the question I get asked most commonly by people about this pod. And that is, what if players were the only people who paid the agents? Would there be more money in football if players paid agents and football clubs didn't pay the agents for anything, unless the agent were doing something specific for the club itself? So if a player in a transfer deal, he pays the agents' fees, the money stays in football. Is that true?
I guess it would, but all that would perhaps happen under those circumstances is that the transfer fee might be higher, because if you are selling a player or buying a player, and you're banking or budgeting for, let's say, £50 million plus £5 million for the agent, the selling club will know that, and they will now try to charge you £55 million. Right. So I'm not sure that would necessarily work. But also remember, is that fair on the players? Because the players aren't necessarily agitating for a move, are they? It's the selling club has put a price on them. Effectively, you know, sends out or gets an agent to send out to interested clubs that, you know, such and such is available, and it's a bit like selling a house. You know, the reason why I'd use an estate agent is because they do all of that type of work which I as a player wouldn't necessarily be familiar with.
Yeah, do you have your agent fee spreadsheet in front of you on your lap?
Sort of, yes.
Okay, well, because I want to ask about a specific club, and surprisingly, it's not Palace. Wolves are a team every football fan admires. I love watching Wolves. I would actually pay money to go and see Wolves play. I think they're a brilliant club, very well run club, very well managed club. But there's always been slight discussions, you know, behind the back of the hand about their relationship with agents. How much did Wolves pay out to agents in that last season?
I think Wolves are around about 10, 11. So, you know, it wasn't particularly big.
Oh, okay.
You know, Palace paid 8. The smallest was Burnley at 4. If you take a look at the Wolves figures, most of their signings were the players that came up from the Championship.
Is that so? That's interesting.
So, yeah, they had an absolutely fantastic they had a fantastic squad. They ripped up the Championship in the year they came up. Yeah. They do have a very close relationship with one of the super agents.
Yeah, which is why I asked the question. Yeah.
So that they you know, so therefore through him. So I'm just checking my numbers here. So no, theirs was 8.6. I got it wrong. So yeah, so that they were, you know, pretty average.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm glad you admitted to getting it wrong on air. We wouldn't want tweets again, would we? No. Swiss Ramble getting involved, telling us we were 1.6 million quid out. I think that was, if this was live, that would be a very unusual moment on the show, because our listeners got the chance to hear you checking something on air. You could almost hear the rustle of the spreadsheet. As you could almost hear the Baroness tutting in the kitchen. In the background, I'm not implying that that you make the Baroness stay in the kitchen while you do the podcast. That would be unfair.
I'm not that northern.
No, they're your words, not mine. Everybody tweet him, not me. The FA has confirmed it's going to make over 100 people redundant, which is never good news. At what sort of level are these redundancies happening, Kieran?
Well, it's 124 jobs in total. Now, having gone into the small print, they did have 42 vacancies, which they've now withdrawn. So it looks like 82 people are going to be losing their jobs. Now, my main concern is at what level is this going to be? Yeah. Clearly, there are places such as St George's Park in Burton, which does have a large number of employees of the FA. It would be a shame if that was being concentrated. The FA has said that it's going to cost around about £300 million this year to have to deal with COVID. A bit like Spurs, they have gone to the banks and they're borrowing up to £200 million at 0.5% interest because they're being hit. Because clearly the England matches won't be taking place, so that's very lucrative. They were hosting a number of the Euro 2020 matches. I think I was due to go to a concert at Wembley this summer. And then things like the cup finals, where the FA make a huge amount of money from merchandising and catering and things of that nature in general, that will be lost. And the FA does have a big hospitality arm, which offers meals and things of that nature when matches are not taking place, because you've got many corporates who simply like to have something hosted at Wembley. So all in all, it is struggling. The senior staff at the FA have taken pay cuts. I think Gareth Southgate is taking 30%. I think quite a few of the Blazers are taking 15% as well, but they won't go too short. You've got these blokes in their 60s who are earning £800,000 a year, so don't worry too much about them. And everybody who's earning more than £50,000 at the FA has been asked to take a 7.5% cut. So it is tiered. The people on the highest pay packets are taking the biggest reductions, which is good to see. I think that is a progressive way to deal with it.
It is good to see, actually, because I was about to get angry and point out that there are other ways than making people redundant. That, for example, you could not pay bonuses to top earners, or you could cut the wages of top earners. But they've already done that, so that's pulled the rug from under my left wing feet. But I'm pleased to hear that is the case. I don't think there was a sadder behind closed doors sight this week than the playoff final at Wembley, Exeter, Northampton. Not only do you really know you're in an empty stadium and it's at Wembley, but just Northampton players losing the opportunity to celebrate with their fans made me rather sad. I'm sure Exeter fans won't agree. I do have to ask you, Kieran, of course, because there will be tens of thousands of people listening to this saying, oh, yeah, which concert was Kieran going to at Wembley? Can we have that information?
I can't. Was it the Killers? I think it was the Killers.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I just thought you might say a Marillion reunion concert or something. Which Killers is great. I would have gone to that with you.
Oh, well, you might have to. Well, the Baroness isn't that arsed.
Oh, there are so many things going through my mind now, but I'm too mature to say any of them. Some Sheffield Wednesday players have not been paid in full this month. Now, when Guy sent this question through last evening, the word some drew my attention there. Some Sheffield Wednesday players, why is that true? Only some Sheffield Wednesday players? And were the Sheffield Wednesday players made aware in advance that they wouldn't be paid in full this month?
Well, the story broke overnight, as it were, and it came through on the BBC Look North website. So it's not the first time this potentially has happened. There were rumours about it in December as well, although the club denied it. But it doesn't look too great. Wednesday are up on charges. If the players haven't been paid in full, when some of their biggest earners, so, you know, the likes of Forestieri, I think Stephen something or other, I can't remember his surname now. He's not. I think he's leaving as well. So some of their players who have, you know, done very well for the club historically and been very well paid, they're out of contract. Those are not being renewed. So it does suggest that Wednesday are trying to cut back on their costs. By all accounts, the club has been asked to comment by both the local paper and the local TV station, but nothing's come out of it. So it creates a bit of an uncertainty, especially when, as you're probably aware, although contracts expire on the 30th of June, most players do get a month's grace in terms of their July payments as well. So it's all a bit messy.
Okay, time now, Kieran, for what seems to be a weekly trip to Wearside for another Sunderland story. It's I'm sure Sunderland fans would love to have a couple of weeks off. But Sunderland have told staff they will be extending the furlough scheme through July and August, which is good, but they won't be topping up salaries anymore to the full amount.
That's right. So, you know, under the job retention scheme, as it officially is called, you know, we refer to it as furlough. The Chancellor has said that the government will cover 80% of the first £2,500 a month, and then it's optional as to what happens with the remainder of the pay packet. Sunderland have said, well, we're not going to top up. They've been a bit coy as to whether this refers to players as well.
So
where that will leave players in terms of, are they allowed to walk away? Are Sunderland able to command a transfer fee for them? Is uncertain. And also, you know, Sunderland, if you look at, we just mentioned Wednesday, we just mentioned Sunderland. We also had Derby not paying their players or staff in full a few months ago as well. What's all three of those clubs got in common? They've not published their accounts. And as you know, people think I get a bee in my bonnet about this, but there's never, in my view, a good reason to not publish information. And I think it's perhaps more than a coincidence that these three clubs have got issues in terms of paying staff and are not publishing information. And remember, that information is for the fans, because at the same time as we're talking about this, the clubs are asking fans, please don't ask for a refund in an ideal situation. You know, do you want to put it towards next year's season ticket and so on? You know, fans have been absolutely brilliant. You know, where they've been able to afford to do so, but clubs are still treating them at sort of a bit arm's length, and I think that's very harsh. You know, we are the biggest investors in football.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Were those accounts to be published, though, or when those accounts are published, they wouldn't specifically mention that in a given month some players didn't get paid. Wouldn't it just reveal an annual salary figure, and then it would take somebody with forensic knowledge like you to look at the accounts and go, well, hang on a second, it doesn't work out. So, it's brilliant. Of course they should publish accounts, but the likes of me looking at it wouldn't spot anything amiss, would they?
Well, but perhaps not. But it's your club, you know. Yeah. So surely, as an investor in your, if the club is on the one hand saying, look, we'd rather you didn't ask for a refund for the remaining matches on your season ticket, surely you have the right to say, well, under those circumstances, show me the numbers. You know, at least be transparent with me. And that's what these clubs are declining to do. They seem to want to have their cake and eat it. And while Sunderland haven't published those accounts, a little birdie did send me an email with some very interesting numbers relating to the accounts, which suggested that the owners are saying, well, we're not taking a salary as such, but what they're doing is that, you know, perhaps they're invoicing the club through other companies for their services. So, it, again, it's this doublespeak that makes you feel uncomfortable when we want to think good things about our club. It doesn't matter which club you support. You want to have that sense that it's doing the right things for the right reasons.
Well, that sort of illustrates what I was trying to say. The thing is, for a football fan like me, Kieran, it's the little birdie that I get my information from, because, like most fans, I wouldn't be able to interpret a club's set of accounts. I, like most fans, I hope and assume that my club act in good faith, and all fans are always horrified to hear that that's not the case. And fans get very defensive about their clubs. Of course they do, and I'm sure I would do that if this story was about Palace. But, you know, if you were to put Sunderland's accounts in front of me and say, look, this the wages thing looks a bit dodgy, I wouldn't, unless you were there to show me why, I wouldn't know. And I think most football fans are the same. And I think football clubs take advantage of that, don't they? They realise that most football fans aren't really going to do anything other than look at the bottom line or say, how much are we in debt? Are we in any trouble of going out of business? If not, then I'm not interested in the accounts.
Yeah, because we go to football to get away from that garbage.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's perfectly understandable. At the same time, you know, there's far smarter people than myself that will be looking at it. And every club has somebody who's the equivalent of a Bobby Numbers amongst the fan base, who will say, well, let's just take a look at this. We're not trying to catch clubs out. We're just trying to make sure that the thing which is, you know, after our family, probably one of the things we love most in our lives, is behaving in an appropriate manner.
Yeah, both on and off the football pitch, yes. Kira, let's not fool people that you don't go to football to get away from that garbage. We all know what you do at half-time. It's a spreadsheet. While the rest of us are vainly queuing for a pint and a pie, you're just spreading out like an old lady with a blanket on her lap. Now, we do have some more upbeat stories, I'm pleased to say. First of all, the Premier League has offered English women's football £1 million to help them start the 2020-21 season. It doesn't seem a massive amount of money, but it's an amount of money which is good.
Yes, I mean, this has come from Richard Masters, who's the new big cheese at the Premier League. And this money is aimed at paying for testing, because one of the reasons why the Women's Super League was cancelled this season was simply that if you take a look at the costs of continuing when you've got no money coming in, yes, you've got wages. The wages in women's football aren't huge compared to men's football, as we know. It's a very small fraction. So therefore, the testing costs become disproportionately larger. So the Premier League has made this suggestion. It's also suggested that it takes over the running of women's football from the FA itself, although not necessarily immediately. I think it wants to concentrate on finishing this season and having some form of structure for the Premier League next season. And that could work to the benefit, because it might be able to sell the rights alongside the Premier League men's rights as a complete package. And things of that nature, so that could be beneficial for women's football as a whole package. In terms of a restart date for the WSL, a bit like the National League, because it's dependent upon match day income and things of that nature, there's no sign of a return, I suspect, before we have the green light from the health authorities in terms of when people can have mass gatherings.
Well, see, this is the problem for the women's game and for the men's game. They were discussing this on Sky last night during your game. Although, to be fair, Kieran, it was just after United had scored their third goal, so I was still laughing and missed a bit of it. But it's very difficult for both the women and the men to plan for next season when we don't know when next season will start. I mean, how do clubs start, you know, broadcasting, not just broadcasting deals, but advertising deals, sponsorship deals? If, you know, they said last night at Sky, it could be September, it could be October. It's almost impossible for clubs to to work things out. And for the women's game and the men's game at lower levels, it makes it even more difficult, doesn't it? As you say.
Yes. I mean, the clubs are so dependent upon getting fans in to watch the match. But also, I think, you know, in terms of women's football, they're trying to grow the game. The national team is doing really well and gets fantastic crowds.
Yeah.
Women's football is more erratic in terms of the numbers attending, but they are trying to sort of come through the tailwinds of the women's national team. It's going to be a problem. You can't restart until we get the okay from the government. And as we've seen with sort of local lockdowns in respect of Leicester arising this week, we could be back to some form of lockdown in the autumn for all we know.
Yeah, as a Palace fan, and I'm sure Everton fans will be thinking about this as well, because Leicester is due there tonight. Politically, that's a really strange situation, the Leicester lockdown one, because it's all very well, and I believe the club, absolutely. Yeah, I think Premier League clubs are probably the safest environment in the country at the moment in terms of cleanliness, hygiene, testing, etc. But if I was a citizen of Leicester and I was in lockdown for another 2 weeks, I'm not entirely sure I'd be pleased to wave the Leicester City football team off on a coach to Liverpool, or whether I'd be entirely pleased to see 35 people coming up from South London on Saturday. It seems, just for the look of the thing, it would seem to me much better to play at a neutral ground or postpone the game. What do you think?
Yep. Yeah. Health has got to come first, and it's difficult to see, by having matches take place at the King Power, how that would be the case.
Yeah, especially when you've told the rest of the city they've got to stay indoors. It's strange. And now, the next two stories are kind of related a little bit to this, because they involve the cost of testing, etc. But remember, we had a chat last week here about clubs not physically being able to afford to compete in the National League playoffs. But Chester FC have confirmed they will take part in the National League North playoffs, and the players will play for nothing. Now, I'm always quite chuffed when I learn about a story via tweets from the fans of a club, which is what happened here. We had loads of messages from Chester City fans saying this was a good story that we had to talk about, and we're always happy to talk about stories that come from the fans. So, and this is not a deferral either, Kieran. The players haven't said they'll take the money at a future date. They've just said we don't want to be paid. We want to play. Don't worry about us.
Yeah, I mean, and this is Chester FC. Remember, Chester City went out of business. So, so Chester FC is a fan-owned club. And I get quite a few emails from Dr. Les, who's a big Chester FC fan. And I think we've got an invite to the Diva. So perhaps we might pop up there one day to see what life's like in the National League. I think it's fantastic of the players to say that both their wages and the promotion bonuses and playoff bonuses, they're going to set those aside because they want to play football. And I think that's sometimes, you know, we have become a little bit jaundiced on this podcast, that, you know, the nature of money and the greed, which is sometimes expressed by people, most of the time not players themselves. I think this is fantastic from the players themselves. So they've got a playoff due against Altrincham. They're not even guaranteed contracts if they do get promoted. Remember, the contracts in the National League expired on the 30th of April. But this is a sign of, we've got young men who love playing football. And if they don't get paid, so what? It's a chance to win something. It's a chance to go up to a new challenge, and fair play to them for taking that approach.
Yeah, well, also, they love playing football, but clearly in this situation have an affection and a respect for Chester FC, because you wouldn't do it just for the sake of playing football. I mean, if you didn't like the club or its fans, you'd say you'd walk away. So it's clearly it's a reward for the loyalty of Chester fans, if you like, as well. And on a similar note, in the National League South, Bath City have launched a crowdfunding scheme to help them take part in the playoffs. And just to sort of give an idea for listeners of what the figures are, Bath City need to raise £35,000 to take part in the playoffs. It doesn't seem a lot of money to Premier League football fans, but to Bath City, it's an awful lot. And the reason they need the money, and it's the same with Chester City, all players and staff have got to be tested at least four times during the playoff process. That takes a lot of money. Managers, players and coaches have got to be taken back off furlough, especially at Bath. The manager was on furlough. You've got all the extra travelling costs, because coaches have to be deep cleaned before and afterwards. So
yeah, I think it's important that people know where this money's going. And so they've launched a crowdfunding scheme. They've got, as of this morning, more than £14,000 already, which is brilliant. So it looks like they might be able to get it. So it just shows, though, that clubs are, it's not just the players, clubs are desperate to take part in some kind of normal football process as well.
Yes, very much so. And it goes back to the roots of football. I mean, they've actually now raised 36 grand, so which is fantastic.
That's had good support. Effort in 3 hours.
Yes. And they've had support from Bristol Rovers, who are a club we spoke to about last week. Because, again, let's take a look at the history of football. When Bristol Rovers didn't have anywhere to play, they ended up playing at Twerton Park.
Twerton Park, yeah, of course.
So, you know, it's good to see that there is a good relationship between the two clubs. And I believe that Bristol Rovers have always played a pre-season friendly at Twerton Park as a sort of a thank you for being there in the hour of need. They've now asked to extend they've got what referred to as stretch target of 50 grand because they want to be able to offer players contracts for next season. So, you know, you wish them all the best. And it is good to see that that fans are putting their hands in their pockets. One of the local larger clubs has been supportive as well. And with all the bad news in football, these are good news stories.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'd like to hear, actually, if we have any Dorking Wanderers fans listening, I'm sure we do, who are due to be playing Bath in the playoffs, how they're affording it and whether they're comfortable doing it. Because, it takes two teams to play a football game. But it is a good news story. And so congratulations to Bath for raising that money. And well done, Bristol Rovers, for helping them out. Colchester United have come up with some quite innovative ways to fund season ticket refunds, or not fund season ticket refunds, whichever way you want to put it.
Yes. So what Colchester have done is, first of all, that the owner has said, if your circumstances are that you either want the money back or you need the money back, you know, that's we will do our best to get that to you ASAP. So that's the right approach. Then they've got sort of the other things which you can put it towards next year's season ticket. You can put it towards individual match tickets. But they've also created something called a Club United Fund. And what happens here, and I think this is really smart, is that if you don't want your refund this year, your money gets put aside into a separate pot, and then the fans vote on how that money's going to be spent. So let's say that they get, you know, 30 grand or 50 grand back from fans. And then what the club will do is say, right, well, we can either put that towards improving the training facilities, doing this work in the South Stand, putting more money into the academy. And every fan who has taken this approach, put money effectively, said, I don't want the refund, they will have a democratic vote, and it will go as to, you know, whatever the most fans decide. So you're not just putting money back into the club in general and thinking, well, you know, is that going into the chairman's pocket? Is that going into a new player, new contract for that centre forward who we think is a bit bobbins or whatever? The club is being transparent as to how the money is going to be allocated. We'll give fans, and fans can suggest, make suggestions themselves, and then a vote's going to be taken.
Well, I think that is very, very good thinking from Colchester United, and they are to be congratulated again. It's good that we've congratulated three or four clubs today, which makes a change. Because there is nothing at any level of football, Kieran, you and I know, no matter what level of team you support, there is nothing a football fan likes more than feeling that they have some level of involvement in that club. That it's an investment that goes beyond just buying a ticket or a season ticket or a scarf or a shirt with your name on, or granddad, or whatever it is on the back. So it's the same when you meet the people who get involved with supporters trusts, with club foundations who volunteer to do stuff. They just like to think that they've got a tiny part of the club. So, and if clubs can make that happen, that's only got to be good for football, isn't it? If, like you talked about Sunderland and opened this, if you've got a club that's actually saying to their fans, come along, join in, we need your help. Because football fans, as we've implied virtually every week from all walks of life, are clever, intelligent people. They've got all sorts of skills that the club could use. So it's good to see a more, for want of a better word, symbiotic relationship between them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's very progressive. Lincoln City are doing something very similar. I think that they've said to fans is that if you don't want to take the rebate as cash, we will issue you shares. And therefore you do become an owner of the club. Yeah. And all of these things, I think is showing that some clubs are taking the view that we recognise that without fans, we are nothing. And I think it's testament also to some of the progressive owners and people involved. And it's a credit to the game. And it does make you feel slightly warm and fuzzy inside as well, which normally after this podcast, you know, if I did drink, I'd probably be heading for one.
Yeah, I'm disappointed to hear that you're not leaving me in a warm and fuzzy mood after every pod, Kieran, but you know, we'll push that aside for one moment. And talking of crowdfunding and innovation, it says here, because I've written it down, this is the time when I paint the smile on and pretend to be enthusiastic about asking for support for the price of football. Because, hey, if you want to get involved in your football club, that's brilliant. But if you want more involvement in your podcast, now's your chance. Because if you want to support the price of football, you can do so by visiting supporter.acast.com/priceoffootball, price of football even, or the price of football, I understand, is quite a good podcast too. So supporter.acast.com/priceoffootball, or you can just click the link if you are already listening in the Acast app. So a big thank you to all of the people who have already supported us, and that includes Matt Buckland, who says, thanks for the fascinating insight into football's money merry-go-round and the Baron's love life. We may do a special one day just on the Baron's love life, and we might put that behind the paywall because that'd be a good way of raising money. I think we'll put. and Matt Buckland says, I guess Matt might be a Palace fan because he says, even though Kieran's a Brighton fan, I would happily buy him a lime and soda. That's nice.
Thank you.
Matt Roberts says he really enjoys the pod and would really appreciate it if we could find a way for Tranmere not to get relegated. We'll look into that, Matt. We'll look into that. Farhad says, thanks, guys, for the wonderful, insightful pod. I think that might be Farhad who asked our first question from Saudi Arabia the other day. Andrew, I'm almost too sad to read this out, Kieran. Andrew says, I'm doing my A-levels next year and I really want to get into accounting and football finance. What have we done? Seriously. Andrew, can I just point out, I know you enjoy the pod, that's brilliant, thank you for getting in touch, but accounting is not all glamorous women in Moscow, Andrew. I have to point out there's some actual accountancy involved in the job. I know you've heard Kieran tell stories of nightclubs in Blackpool and Scunthorpe and most parts of America, but Andrew, please, good luck with that. But he'd also like to know if we can, Kieran, give him any advice. So perhaps if Andrew wants to get in touch with us again,
drop an email.
Yeah, drop an email to Kieran. It won't be me giving you advice, Andrew. Why don't you try a more sensible, financially secure career like comedy and theatre? but good luck with your A levels, Andrew. It's good luck with using Kieran as a role model. But yeah, but drop us an email and Kieran will happily get in touch because we are all about encouraging the new generation. The next comment, I read this one, is from Edgeley Park Paradise, which I genuinely thought was a double-barreled name, first of all. It sounded like a Terry Thomas character from a 1950s film. Yeah, Edgeley Park Paradise, but of course, I've looked at it again, realised where Edgeley Park is. Edgeley Park Paradise says, top show, makes WFH a little easier. Thank you for that. This is a great name. John M54, brackets, not my postcode. Thank you for that. Or a road. So John says, thank you very much for the information and perspective. Barry in Scunthorpe simply says, keep up the brilliant work. And if Barry was involved in your night out in Scunthorpe, it might be not the first time you've heard Barry say those words. But that's just a selection of people that have been generous enough to support us. And we do thank you all very much. We will be back on Monday with our questions pod, which is rapidly becoming the much longer of the two because you keep sending us such good questions. And if you want to send us a question, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. And who have you got this weekend, Kieran?
We've got Norwich away. So
oh, God,
big,
yes,
big match
have.
In the big six.
That's a big, because yes, it's a winnable game for you, isn't it? Because then you've got a tricky running, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got... Liverpool and Manchester City are our next two home games, so our goal difference could be taking a bit of a hammering.
Yes, I also think we're recording this on the afternoon before it comes out, so it's Wednesday afternoon. I think West Ham Chelsea tonight is probably one of the most important games in West Ham's history, because they really can't afford to get relegated, can they, West Ham?
No. I mean, it's going to be tough for whoever goes down. There'll be lower parachute payments next year. Yeah. Clearly, potential for no crowds as well. Clubs are going to take a massive financial hit if they drop into the Championship.
Yeah, and apologies to any West Ham fans who may have been in quite a good mood who are listening to this on Thursday morning after they've lost to Chelsea, but it may be after you've beaten Chelsea. So let's end on that optimistic note. Kieran, I'll see you next time.
Yep, look forward to it. Stay safe, ladies and gentlemen.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.